Hey you, very good morning to you. It's Sunday morning, the 13th of September, 2020. Sunny Salford, lovely weather here in Salford. Bit of an Indian summer on the way. Next few days, apparently, very nice indeed. That's the forecast. Do join the programme on Twitter if there's something you'd like to say. You know the Twitter handle by now. Welcome to Sunday View. I'm in fine fettle, fine form. Let's do it.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Well, rising cases dominating the broadcast news this morning. Talks of a second lockdown, the R rate, and all of that. Changes, of course, coming into effect tomorrow. The rule of six. No more than six people indoors, no more than six people gathering outdoors. A lot of talk about that. This is where we look through the Sunday newspapers and eavesdrop on the aforementioned broadcast news. It is Sunday View. And like I said, it's lovely. I'm looking out studio window as I speak with you, and it is glorious this morning. Going to definitely get outside this afternoon. That's the plan. While we have a bit of weather like this, get outdoors and spend a bit of time in local park before the COVID marshals start turning up. You know, young people's selfishness in going out and getting pissed and bringing the virus home with them and infecting their grannies is dominating the news interviews this morning. It really is. Apparently last night, the tabloid newspapers, of course, they love this. The Mail loves it. The Express loves it. The Mirror, Sunday Mirror, Sunday Mail, Sunday Express. Loads of photographs of people doing what people have done, well, since forever on Saturday evenings. Gone out and had a bit of fun, had a bit of the crack, don't you know? So a lot of that. COVID marshals talk this morning that councils are telling the government that COVID marshals is a bad idea because they don't have any money to pay the COVID marshals. And I got to thinking, which is a dangerous thing, for me, generally. I got to thinking about Sabotage. Not the Beastie Boys classic track from the early 90s. No, a bit of Sabotage. What about getting, if they do try to staff COVID marshal positions, why not apply for these jobs and get them? You know, do a good job in the interview and then just basically do feck all. Just walk around the parks ignoring people. COVID marshals. We are really here, we are talking about councils employing people to walk around parks and to tell people you're sitting a bit too close to each other there. That's where we are. A lot of talk about that. Rising cases, fear porn on the morning news. Here's a little taste of it. I don't want to suffocate you with this. Here's John Ashton, former Northwest Public Health Chief John Ashton, on Sky today.
We're seeing day on day now about 3,000 reported new cases. We feel as though it's back in March. You know, in a week's time, you'll get people getting sicker. In 2 to 3 weeks' time, we'll see an increase in people being admitted to hospital. And then almost certainly the deaths will pick up after that. This is a desperate situation. We're 6 months on from March and we've learned nothing.
Yeah, that's about the size of it, right? And there's more to come, not too much of the fear, but everybody taking to the airwaves this morning, at least every guest on every television and news programme, was basically saying the same thing. Second wave is pretty much here. We're seeing the case numbers go up. That must mean, they tell us today, it must mean that we are going to see hospitalisations and severe illnesses, they're around the corner. We'll come back to that in a few minutes. The perennially offended are screaming again today about Britain's Got Talent. I don't watch this type of television programming because I'm not going to say it, no. I don't watch talent shows. I don't watch entertainment television very much. But apparently a comedian was making jokes about death on the show last evening. I'm sure some of you watch it. Britain's Got Talent. A vicar from Liverpool called Alan Finnegan made jokes about death during his semi-final. And that reminded me that last week, Ofcom, which is the UK regulatory authority for broadcasters, for the media, received about 15,000 complaints because a dance group called Diversity incorporated into one of their routines a kneeling on the neck, some sort of Black Lives Matter type of thing. 15,000 people complaining about it. I'm not going to go down that road, will I? No, have I got time? I'm looking at the clock already. There's so much to get through. No, we'll just move on. We'll move on. Right, front pages in a minute. But before the front pages, as has become the custom on Sunday View, we'll have a tune. Here's the tune then. Welcome to Sunday View. Good to be with you. Hope you're up and about and in good health and spirits. CeeLo Green on the Richie Allen Radio Show Sunday morning. It's coming up for 9 minutes past 11. Let's look at the front pages of the newspapers then very quickly. Mid-morning, it's a bit late for doing that, but we do it anyway every Sunday. We look through them quickly. Where the cases story originated? Well, it leaked documents, apparently. The Sunday Times says it has seen leaked documents from the Department of Health showing that coronavirus is spreading through care homes again. Right? A memo sent to Matt Hancock's team lists care homes in Bristol, Wiltshire, Wolverhampton and Nottinghamshire as among the worst hit. At the front page of The Observer, top lawyers slam minister for wrecking UK's reputation. You know this story by now. Breaking international law and all of that. This is about the Brexit deal, the withdrawal agreement. The government announcing last week, the week before even, that it planned to breach part of the Brexit withdrawal agreement around rules around state aid being one of the most contentious points there. I'm not going to get into that today. The Sunday Telegraph, Johnson said to opt out of human rights laws. Sunday Telegraph reporting that Britain would opt out of major parts of European human rights laws, including the Human Rights Act. Okay? That's on the front page of the Sunday Telegraph. There is an interview, or there is an article inside the Sunday Telegraph written by Keir Starmer, the Labour leader as well. Also on the front page of the Sunday Telegraph today is this. Millions at most risk may be told to stay home again. Right, this is the shielding thing. When all of this nonsense began back in late February, early March, people with underlying health conditions were told basically to shield, to isolate, to shield themselves, to stay indoors pretty much 24/7 and have other people do your basics for you, your shopping and whatnot. Well, allegedly, apparently, this will happen again, but it will be more specific this time. And people will get letters sent to them from their local, whichever NHS surgery they are signed up to. So I would expect one of those letters as somebody who has asthma. And my NHS clinic would be aware of the fact that I have asthma. So they would send me a letter in the post telling me, you have to shield. So that's coming as well, according to the Sunday Telegraph. Mail on Sunday, very interesting story, but not too much talk of this story on telly or radio today. End the trauma of lone births, says the Mail on Sunday. This is a campaign by the Mail on Sunday describing what it calls the unimaginable anguish facing thousands of women who can't be joined by their partners when they give birth because of COVID restrictions. 60 MPs, more than 60 MPs, including the former Health Secretary Jeremy Hunt, are calling for NHS trusts to lift their ban so that women don't have to give birth alone. It's all lunacy, this. It's lunacy. I'm not getting into it again. Madness. And this has been going on for months. While, no, I won't say it. I'm not self-censoring today. I'm just not going down certain avenues because we'll never get out of here, you and me. We have an agreement, don't we? 11 till 12. And then we go off on the piss, don't we? Or we go walking in parks or whatever. I'm not going to get into it. So that's on the front page of the Mail on Sunday. End the trauma of lone births. The pun of the day goes to the Sunday People. The headline is Tally-hovid. Tally-hovid. What does it mean? Well, the Sunday People is featuring claims that the Conservative Party has bailed out fox hunts with cash reserved for helping out businesses in the time of furlough schemes and all of that. Apparently hunting firms, what do you call them? I've never been near a horse, never been on a horse, never will be, as long as I live. No interest in horses personally. And hunting, of course, the, what is it? The unspeakable in pursuit of the inedible. Is that right? Well, that's in the Sunday People today. Tally-ho, with Sunday Express, Boris pledges to see justice is truly done. Some talk around this morning on the Mar show. This is about shaking up the justice system. The paper, the Sunday Express, calls it the most radical sentencing reforms in 20 years. Harsher sentencing. But this is just Tory claptrap. It's what you would expect of a Conservative government. Harsher sentences, more prisons, more prison guards. There is some interesting things in there. We might get into them next week. And finally, for the newspapers for now, the Star on Sunday. Headline is Question of Sport Trio Axed. It is interesting. So you have Sue Barker, who's a magnificent television presenter. Oh, she really is. One of the best of all time. Absolutely fantastic. Chairing marathon television sessions. Wimbledon, of course, most famously. The Olympics, great broadcaster. And Question of Sport is a programme where two teams of three, led by captains Phil Tufnell, former cricketer, and Matt Dawson, former rugby player, they would be, Sue, Matt and Phil would be the regulars, and then each team would have two sportsmen and women come on every week, and it's a question of sport, so they would answer questions about sport. It's a very good programme. Sue is a great broadcaster. But next season will be the last we see of Sue, Phil and Matt Dawson. Have they decided to give up? No! No, they're being replaced. And this pisses me off. You've got Matt Letizia gone from Soccer Saturday. And all of these broadcasters, experienced men and women, will be replaced by some woman. Some black woman. And then some black lesbian woman. And eventually, some blind, black, non-binary person. All in the name of diversity. If you're a white boy, right, born in England to parents of English heritage, forget about broadcasting, television or radio. There's no future in it for you, believe me. So forget Brexit then and this ridiculous row over breaking international law. We'll leave that, or breaking the terms of the withdrawal agreement. Not interested. We'll never properly leave the European Union. I've been saying that from day one. It ain't going to happen. We'll leave it for another day. Sophie Ridge spoke with Peter Openshaw, Imperial College, Professor of Experimental Medicine. Yeah, right. Here's Peter Openshaw with Ridge, and she asks him, is he alarmed? Are you alarmed, Peter, at the rise in cases that we have been hearing about today?
I think it's so important that the detection systems that have been set up in the UK have picked up this signal that we're seeing a really sharp rise in cases. And it's come from several sources. I think everyone is in agreement that we really need to act very quickly now in order to prevent this from growing exponentially. I think that's the main point, is that we must act fast, because it's so much harder to get this sort of thing under control. If you delay even a few days, is potentially going to be quite dangerous now at this particular moment.
Interesting to say that even a few days of delay could be critical. Sir Mark Walport, the former chief scientific advisor, said that Britain is on the edge of losing control of COVID. Do you think he's right?
Well, yes, I think that is right. It's a bit like water seeping through a dam. You know, it starts as a trickle, and if you don't do something about it, then it can turn into a real sort of a cascade. And we know from, for example, the REACT study, which is being run by Paul Elliott and Steve Riley, that the reproduction number has now jumped. You know, it was down at about 0.5 at its best during the summer. It's now 1.7. So that's 1.7 people for every person who's infected, and that means exponential growth. And there's a story which has been leaked into the Sunday Times today showing that it's back in care homes as well. So, you know, we know that these are very vulnerable pockets. It's not just in the younger people. It's starting to appear in people who are more vulnerable. And that inevitably is going to be followed by hospital admissions and deaths. So, you know, we need to act quickly. And this isn't a game. You know, we shouldn't be out trying to party as hard as we can in the run up to Monday's lockdown. We should all be really thinking about what we can do now to slow down the spread.
Yes. Ask not what your government can do for you, eh? What can you do for your government and your NHS? Peter Openshaw. Ridge asks him then, I mean, look, obviously, I don't need to editorialise. You know that this is nonsense. We are finding more cases. Of course you are, because you are increasing the number of tests administered on a daily basis. So of course you're finding cases. But nearly every one of them is in a person who isn't or hasn't been sick. And Ridge should at least point that out. They're not sick, these people. Hospitals at the moment are not full. They're not even half full. In fact, they're empty, really. So people aren't sick, Peter. They might have this thing, whatever it is, but they're not sick. She asks him about the rule of six then, which comes in tomorrow, and asks him about the possibility of even more stringent rules to come in the near future.
Talking about what we can do to slow down the spread, of course, from Monday we'll see these new rules coming in, the rule of six, you can't meet more than six people at any time inside or outside. Do you think that we need to look at further restrictions? Perhaps it's encouraging people to work from home again, perhaps it's curfews. What do you think?
It's really difficult to get the rules sensible and straight and easy to understand. And I can quite see why the government wants to bring in something which is very simple and straightforward. I mean, the rule of six is based on some statistical modelling, so it's not just arbitrary. They haven't picked the number out of thin air.
They have picked the number out of thin air. It is arbitrary. It's a nonsense. It's not backed by any scientific evidence whatsoever. There is no paper, let alone a peer-reviewed paper. There is nothing. This is just nonsense plucked out of thin air. And we'll talk about why this might be happening in a moment. So he's wrong to say it isn't arbitrary. It is arbitrary.
But it does seem somewhat irrational in some of the detail. And I can appreciate that. But
Ridge doesn't jump in and ask him, what do you mean it seems irrational in some of the detail? He dropped the bollock there, not to put too find a point on it, and she should say which parts of it are irrational, but she doesn't. Because like every other presenter on television in the UK in 2020, she's asleep at the wheel, not listening to him.
I'm afraid, you know, it's going to cause pain and suffering for us all to go back to some degree of lockdown. But if we don't do this now, we're going to be right back in hard lockdown in short order. That's the only way we have at the moment for controlling this. But there are other things on the horizon. I think that's really encouraging. We just need to slow it down and delay it and wait for vaccines and for better treatments.
Vaccines and better treatments. You would imagine, I'm pausing it now, I haven't chopped it up. You would imagine that Sophie's next question is, what about the government's own reports about the effect on the nation's health brought about by the lockdown itself? And the economic misery, but she doesn't.
Just to pick up on something you said there, what do you think is irrational about the government's policy then?
Oh, she did ask him. Well done, Sophie.
Well,
mea culpa, she did ask him.
Well, I think people have been, you know, complaining widely about the, you know, the fact that you can carry on doing things like exercising in groups and doing sports and getting together for special events, but yet you can't have you can't have both a grandmother and a grandfather come to visit your home if you're a family of five. So, it is inevitably going to create those difficulties which are hard to explain in terms of rational advice. But it is, on the other hand, very simple. And I think simplicity is so important. We've had some rather complicated rules which have been very hard to interpret and not backed up actually by legal enforcement. So this is different now. It is legally enforceable.
And legally enforceable. I owe Sophie an apology. She did ask him which parts of it were irrational. Ask him about a vaccine then.
Of course, the thing that many people are holding out for when it comes to any kind of return to normality is a vaccine. How far off do you think we are?
Well, I was a bit pessimistic a few months ago. But I think with all the vaccine trials which are now coming through, which are scheduled to deliver a result within the next few months, I do feel that on the basis of what we know about the immune system, that it's likely that these immune responses which are being induced by these vaccines may be protective at least for a few months, possibly even years. We just don't know yet. It's early days. But I do think that we will probably have positive results of at least one of these vaccine trials, probably more than that, by Christmas. And that means that with rapid scaling up, we might have vaccination programs which can roll out to some parts of the world over the next 9 months. So before the winter of 2021-22, I hope that we should have vaccines which are effective. The problem is going to be reaching the parts of the world where these vaccines might have maximal impact.
The vaccine. I'd be willing to bet whatever I have, and it isn't a lot, to be honest, on them announcing a working vaccine this side of Christmas. I really would, and that won't come as any surprise. What do you think, by the way? Tweet me. Maximum pain, do you think, in order to make people beg for the jab? Is that what it is? Maximum pain, keeping people in limbo, keeping people, you know, on tenterhooks. You can go out, you can't go out. You can meet in restaurants, you can't meet in restaurants. You know, there might be a second lockdown. Maximum pain in order to make people beg for the jab. Is that where we are? They've restarted the Oxford AstraZeneca trial, by the way. They announced this yesterday, despite apparently rendering a volunteer incredibly seriously ill with a spinal infection. I'm not going to try and pronounce the name of it, the Latin for it, which left the person without feeling in hands and legs. Don't volunteer for this stuff, please. If you listen to this programme, and even if they begin to offer financial inducements to people to join these trials, if you are broke, don't do it. You're taking your life in your hands, I mean that. 25 minutes past the hour. Time for more music. When we come back, we'll get the Labour Party side of this, the new restrictions and COVID marshals and all of that. We'll hear from Rachel Reeves, Shadow Cabinet Minister, in a moment after Jeff Lynne. Yes, and it's still sunny in Salford. You're listening to the BBG, not the BBC. My name is Richie Allen. This is Sunday View, and it's a pleasure to be chatting to you this morning. I'll read some of your tweets in a moment. Maximum pain, is it? I think it might be. Yeah, one of the best nights out I ever had in my life a couple of years ago, watching Jeff Lynne, ZLO, at the arena in Manchester. Never enjoyed a night as much. Welcome to the programme. Hi to Steve Denyer. How you doing, Steve? Hi to Base Ninja, who says of the AstraZeneca Oxford trial, he makes a good point. I thought they had the result, Richie. The result shows that you're screwed if you take it, based on a man going to hospital with a spinal infection. That's a good point. That's a very good point. Indeed. Tweet at Richie Allen Show. Stand Up X Yorkshire tweets, 76 years they've been working on the flu vax and it is still useless. Yet they have a vaccine for a disease they already claim they know nothing about. Sounds sensible to me, he says sarcastically. Or she, it could be a she. Richard tweets me, they're going to make this a winter of discontent so bad that by spring the masses will be queuing up for the vax, even though the government has said there will be no return to the old ways of life anyway. That's a very good point. Absolutely. Hi to Liz. Liz says, the behavioural experts have been studying us for decades. The majority of people are now putty in the government's hands. Yeah. I think they'll have to ramp up the fear to boost the vaccine uptake. There'll probably be a story of some irresponsible anti-vaxxer killing their granny, says David. Thank you, David. Paul Foster says, how can they possibly claim that with the massive case increases in France and Spain, how can they possibly claim that with the massive case increases in France and Spain? Paul is referring to a ludicrous article in the Sunday Telegraph today that claims that evidence is emerging that wearing of the mask all the time basically increases your immunity to the virus. The headline in the Sunday Express today is "Face Masks Could Be Giving People COVID-19 Immunity, Researchers Suggest." Face masks may be inadvertently giving people COVID-19 immunity and making them get less sick from the virus, academics have suggested in one of the most respected medical journals in the world. This is the New England Journal of Medicine. Wearing the mask could be giving you immunity. Smells like, well, to me. But then again, what do I know? And that's what Paul was referring to there. Number of you are making the case about the cases that, yes, Richie, it is finding people with COVID in their system, but people whom are otherwise pretty well. People who don't even know they have it. A lot of you saying that as well. Philip Mills says, is there anybody in government or in a position of power that is batting for this madness to stop? Anyone that isn't owned that can tell the truth. John Parsons says, if I was organising this, I might want to ramp up the deaths over winter. Further lockdowns, etc., dangling all the while, keeping people dangling in the hope of a forthcoming vaccine. Then have the vaccine ready for next winter with the promise of getting back to normal for 2022. Yeah, why not? John Stott says they're gaslighting people to the point of mental exhaustion while crushing morale so that they'll accept just about anything for it to stop. Jose Vasquez, buenos dias, Jose. Richie, thanks for your hard work, he says. All good here in Las Alpujarras. I hope I said that right. Las Alpujarras. Apart from the obvious pandemic. Chris, how you doing, Chris? Yeah, okay, let's move on. Before we move on and hear from Rachel Reeves from the Labour Party, let's hear this. Back with you in 60 seconds.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
This is The Richie Allen Show, the most listened to independent news radio show in Europe.
And you can grab The Richie Allen Show after it's finished on Spotify, on Podomatic, on iTunes. And I am continuing to upload it to YouTube, but not for much longer. Be aware of that. I don't care how much crying, how much screaming, moaning, complaining. It's a massive pain in the arse for me to do that every evening to get it on YouTube. And I'm going to stop it right soon. But I'll give you plenty of notice anyway. 25 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. So Rachel Reeves then, Labour Party, Shadow Minister, whatever, was on Andrew Marr this morning just to reiterate there is no opposition to this lunacy. Remember the COVID marshals and the councils who can't afford them? Rachel Reeves was asked by Marr if she'd support the councils not appointing the marshals, basically because of the short funding. Here she is, and they get into one or two other things as well.
Without additional funding to support this proposal, and there isn't additional funding, as so far as we can tell, many councils are likely to have to prioritise other activities, or to Precy, we won't do it. Would you support Labour councils and say, we can't afford COVID marshals, we're not going to do it? Would you support them?
The government have got to provide support to enable these things to happen. It's really important that these rules are obeyed. And actually, you know, the vast majority of people have stuck by the rules, as difficult as it has been. But there do need to be penalties for people.
More mutinous atmosphere at the moment.
There do need to be penalties for people, she said. This is a Labour politician now. As millions of people are learning they have no job to go back to when furlough ends in October. This is a Labour politician talking about penalties for people for basically having their neighbours around for a party or for meeting friends for a kick around or a kick about in local parks. Amazing. This is astonishing to me.
Difficult as it has been, but there do need to be penalties for people.
There do need to be penalties for people.
Atmosphere at the moment.
Well, I think there's been a lack of clear guidance and communication from the government. You know, the rules seem to chop and change all the time. And it doesn't help, you know, when we've got a government who wants to disobey international law that then tell the citizens of this country that we have all got to obey the laws that they set. You know, that's one of the reasons why what the government is doing at the moment is breaking trust and is so counterproductive. But I would urge people to stick by the rules because it is in all of our interests. None of us want to get to the position we were in back in April. With May of this virus out of control,
sure.
And we've now got members of SAGE saying that we are losing control of this virus once again.
Just tell her to shut up, Andrew. You know, it makes me laugh when you hear him. Just tell her stop the bullshit, love. But he won't, of course.
And very briefly, a family with four or five children in England has fewer rights to meet, for instance, their grandparents going forward from tomorrow than if they were living in Scotland or Wales. Do you want to see the situation for children right across the UK, England as well?
You see, this is a good point by Mar. And Sophie Ridge, whom I wrongly criticised earlier on, deserves some criticism for not challenging Peter Openshaw when he said that it isn't arbitrary. It is arbitrary. As Mar just pointed out there, this ridiculous rule. Of course it's arbitrary, because it impacts you differently depending on where you are in the country. It's madness, right?
I think the simplicity of the rule of six is useful, but I think the government need to keep under review whether children need to be included in that, or whether we could do more to enable families to come together. But the most important thing for all families across our country is protecting ourselves against this deadly virus. It hasn't
deadly virus, huh?
Gone away. Government advisers are saying it is endemic in some communities. The government should have used the summer to get a grip and get control. Our testing regime, our tracing regime are on the verge of collapse. The government need to put all of its efforts into that. And that's why we're saying get Brexit done, get a deal and concentrate, please, on getting control of this virus.
The Labour Party, Jesus. Right. Andrew Marr. Speaking of Andrew Marr, he did his job for 5 minutes this morning. He was interviewing a woman called Maria Van Kerkhove. She's a World Health Organization goon. I can't be arsed giving you her full title. It doesn't matter. I was briefly delighted with Andrew Marr, who remembered just for a second that he's a journalist. Here he is.
And the good news, I suppose, at the moment is that death rates still look relatively low. And looking across Europe, there is one country which has behaved very differently from the rest. Has not imposed masks on people, has had a much looser lockdown, virtually no lockdown at all, has kept bars and restaurants open and so forth. And that country is Sweden, and they're now doing quite well. Is it possible that the rest of us have got it wrong?
Andrew.
Hallelujah!
Hallelujah!
Hallelujah! Hallelujah!
Hallelujah! Magnificent. Brings up Sweden. He doesn't lie and misrepresent the Swedish data, which most journalists do. They tell you that Sweden, thousands more people died in Sweden, which is a nonsense when you look at the data properly, when you scrutinise it. No, he just came out with it. Good lad. Is it possible that we got it wrong looking at Sweden? No editing here. This is her answer. Do you think she answers the question as a matter of interest? What do you think? Let's see. This is Maria Van Kerkhove. World Health Organization. Sweden is doing well, and it did it differently. It didn't lock people down. Did we get it wrong? What does Maria say?
Well, we do. We have a number of tools that work, and we know that many countries are implementing an all of government, all of society approach in different ways. And what is working in many countries is this testing, making sure that you find, you isolate, and you care for cases based on the severity of their symptoms, making sure that you're doing comprehensive contact tracing. These are the things that break chains of transmission. Other types of measures, such as stay-at-home measures, have helped in some countries because countries, you know, needed some time to build up their public health infrastructure.
Jump in any time now, Andrew, and say, I didn't ask you that. I asked you, based on Sweden, did we get it wrong? But she waffles on.
Get their hospitals ready. build up that testing capacity. And so some countries have implemented these tools in different ways. You mentioned mortality, and you look at the differences in mortality across countries, and you look at what's happening with mortality in Europe. And
I asked you about Sweden, which seems to be doing really, really, really well. And they didn't knock anybody down, love. Did we get it wrong then? Does Sweden prove that the rest of us are wrong?
And I think there's a number of reasons why we're seeing a lower number of deaths, particularly across Europe. First, is that most of the surveillance that begins at the beginning of a pandemic focuses on severe infections.
She just carries
on. And
this
is typical because these are the people who show up at healthcare. And so when testing expands and surveillance expands, you find people on the more...
Don't you miss Jeremy Paxman, don't you? Imagine what Paxman would have done with her.
The more mild end of the spectrum.
Imagine what I would do to her.
Second, we're much better at caring for patients. We're 9 months into this pandemic, and we know a lot more than we did in the beginning.
Yeah, I asked you about Sweden.
Beginning. So with earlier case detection, people can be cared for quicker. And this means earlier oxygen support, respiratory support.
Yeah.
And now we have dexamethasone for severely and critically ill patients.
Yeah.
Next is that our testing strategy is...
How is she getting away with this?
...is very, very different than it was in the beginning, where many countries were really overwhelmed. Now we have much better testing across the world, and so more people are being tested.
Sweden!
So this is essentially the same virus.
No, Andrew, no, you daft! You're supposed to say to her, you went on there for 90 seconds, love. I didn't ask you about that. I asked you, did we get it wrong when you look at what Sweden did? But of course he doesn't pull her back and the rest is well. As I said, he did his job for 5 minutes, 17 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. Sunday View with me, Richie Allen, and it's a pleasant day here in the northwest of the UK. Maria Van Kerkhove there, let's move on. Over on Sky, Reading University Professor Simon Clark, well, he wants us to stay home and sod the high street, basically. Simon Clark. On Sky.
Be saying that they need to get ahead of the curve on this. We've been playing catch-up. Lockdown was catch-up, effectively. The genie then had got out of the bottle and the virus had spread through the population. It needs to be stopped, and it needs to be stopped as soon as possible. I think people who don't need to go to work and don't need to travel on public transport, they don't need to be there and shouldn't be. So unless it's vital for your job, I'm afraid the argument that we need to go back to our offices to keep coffee and sandwich shops afloat is not something that I buy.
Simon, good to talk to you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, my God. You heard what he said at the end and you heard the Sky News presenter response.
And sandwich shops afloat is not need to go back to our... I'm afraid the argument that we need to go back to our offices to keep coffee and sandwich shops afloat is not something that I buy.
Simon, good to talk to you. Thank you.
Rather than jump down his throat, he says, good to talk to you. So long now. So basically, tens of thousands of workers in London alone in hospitality. You're basically saying, screw them, are you, Simon? Eh? Sod them and what's going to happen to them as they face into the winter with no jobs and no alternative job to go to. But he doesn't. No problem. I don't buy the argument we need to get people back into city centres and forget coffee shops and sandwich bars, yeah. Back to Sophie Ridge. No, not back to Sophie Ridge. Let's have a tune. Let's have Diana Ross. Let's have a tune. Then we'll go back to Sophie Ridge. This is Sunday View. A bit of a haphazard Sunday View today, but there you are. Yes, Diana Ross, who missed an open goal at the opening ceremony of USA 1994. Do you remember that, eh? I've got some memory. Yeah, the opening ceremony, the Rose Bowl in Pasadena. And all Diana had to do was just kick this massive football into this big goal. And she hit it wide. She couldn't hit a pig's arse with a banjo, is what her publicist said later on in the day. Welcome back to Sunday View, 12 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. Vernon Coleman tells me, the learned gentleman himself, that the traffic to the website for the leaflets is growing exponentially. That's a lovely thing. If you do have a bit of time and you want to use it to put your time to some use, to some good, and you want to hand leaflets to people or post them through their letterboxes, yes, If you want to turn postie for a day, go to vernoncoleman.com. On the left-hand side is a little menu where it says health. Click on health. And he has provided examples of text that you can use if you're making your own leaflets. On the virus, of course, and on cashless society. He's a good egg, is Dr. Vernon Coleman. And don't forget, he'll be joining me tomorrow at 5:30 p.m. and every Monday thereafter, as long as he's in the humour to do it, as long as he's in the form to do it. I told him he can do it indefinitely. If we eventually get out of this nonsense, we'll find other things to talk about. I'm sure we will. VernonColeman.com. Now, pig's arse with a banjo is right. Yeah. Where am I now? I'll be honest with you, I had a skinful last night, so I'm a bit all over the place this morning. But I came on air, didn't I? Never have I missed a gig because I was too pished to do it. I've always turned up me. Always. This is very interesting now. Sophie Ridge went out and about. Went out to meet the people to report on the impact of COVID on certain industries, right? Today, Sophie Ridge, little cutie. Sophie, you misogynistic bastard. She's a little cutie. She went out to talk about the impact of COVID on nurseries. It's killing the business, apparently. Of course it is. Many won't be reopening. Imagine the problem that will cause in the near future. So June O'Sullivan is the top banana at London Early Years Foundation, which runs lots of nurseries. And June O'Sullivan is a woman after my own heart because she's a Paddy or a Patricia. Here she is talking to Sophie Ridge about social distancing and other things in nurseries. She runs London Early Years Foundation, June O'Sullivan, and you don't want to miss this.
A lot of our parents work in the NHS, so we started to think about how many nurseries we could keep open. And so eventually we ended up with 15 open the whole time.
And how hard is it to safely distance in a nursery?
Well, we didn't socially distance in the nursery. We created our own bubbles before anyone came up with the idea of bubbles. Because children need comfort, and they're human. They need touch, and it's part of their learning. So there was no issue there. And I think once parents realised that there was going to be no issue there, they were far more relaxed. Can you imagine you're a busy doctor in the NHS? You want to leave your child somewhere safe. You do not want to be going away worrying that your child isn't going to be picked up or cuddled or cared for. So no, we put all of that out of their minds.
Well done. Ding dong, eh? We didn't bother with social distancing, she said. Listen again, this is very important.
Safely distance in a nursery.
Well, we didn't socially distance in the nursery. We created our own bubbles before anyone came up with the idea of bubbles. Because children need comfort, and they're human. They need touch, and it's part of their learning. So there was no issue there. And I think once parents realised that there was going to be no issue there, they were far more relaxed. Can you imagine you're a busy doctor in the NHS? You want to leave your child somewhere safe. You do not want to be going away worrying that your child isn't going to be picked up or cuddled or cared for. So no, we put all of that out of their minds. And interestingly, throughout lockdown, no child got sick and no staff member got sick.
What was that? This is important now because she's not talking about a single nursery. She's talking about lots of them.
Cared for. So no, we put all of that out of their minds. And interestingly, throughout lockdown, no child got sick and no staff member got sick.
No child got sick, no staff member got sick.
So how difficult is it for nurseries now?
Yeah, Sophie, sidestepped that one, didn't she? Let's talk about the economics. But it's important. How difficult is it for nurseries? What's going to happen to the business? The industry, if you want to call it that.
It's terrifying because nurseries run on occupancy. And our occupancy pays for our staff costs, and the contribution we get from the government, which is often determined as free, is not free. We have to subsidise that as well. And because we're a social enterprise, we subsidise a large number of children who would otherwise not be able to afford nursery. There are some real risks around, though. So there's an organisation called CEDA that does quite a lot of our research, and they have said that they anticipate around 37 to 40% of nurseries, particularly in areas of deprivation, you know, who are living very much on the edge.
So 40% are at risk of closure.
Of closure, yeah.
Yeah, 40%. Ah, nothing to see here. There's a virus going around and we have to fucking wreck the economy. We have to wreck 40% of nurseries. This is one tiny little industry among tens of thousands of industries in the country. We're finding all these cases, yeah, but none of them are sick individuals. They're not sick. They're not even going to the doctor. They're not ringing the doctor, let alone go to hospital. Yeah, but we've got to wreck the economy. I'm just not going to say any more on that because I've said it too many times already. I'm going to leave you with this today. An article that's in the Mail on Sunday. And you can read it for free. The Mail on Sunday or the Mail, dailymail.co.uk, isn't behind a paywall. It makes its content widely available. And why? Because of the advertising. It can afford to do that. It's one of the most widely read websites in the world. You get lots of pop-up ads, Google ads, while you're reading the articles. But you can read the articles for free, gratis, fry. Mein Freund. Now, Andrew Doyle has written a brilliant opinion piece in the Mail on Sunday entitled, "Our children are being brainwashed by a divisive new dogma that I fear will stoke, not heal, racial tensions." And I'll read just a smidgen of it for you. It's very, 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 very good. I like it. "Children across the country have finally returned to school, but in their 5 months away, there has been a cultural sea change. With the rise of the Black Lives Matter movement, head teachers have come under increasing pressure to signal that they are on the right side of history on a wide range of issues. Excuse me, now before I read any more, this is something I've been banging on about for a long time. The imposition of the theory of binary choice on every man, woman and child in the world. Binary choice. The removal of shades of grey. The removal of nuance. The removal of, well, if you look at it this way or you look at it that. No, no, no. You're either for it or you're against it. You're on the right side or you're on the wrong side. Right? Very good, this in the Mail on Sunday. "Increasing pressure to signal they, head teachers and schools, are on the right side of history on a wide range of issues. This means modifications to school curricula and pastoral policies that have been rushed through with little consultation with parents or staff. As a result, pupils are being subjected to an even more suffocating form of woke education. Teachers have attended unconscious bias training sessions, despite the fact that the science behind such courses has been largely discredited. Others have been advised to read up on books such as White Fragility by Robin DiAngelo, which claims that all white people are racist and that their denials are further proof of racism. Teachers have been told to acquaint themselves with books which tell the teachers, the white teachers anyway, you are racist inherently, and to suggest otherwise is proof of your racism." Jesus wept, right? "They're also being asked to read books like How to Be an Anti-Racist by Ibram X. Kendi. The thesis is self-explanatory," writes Andrew Doyle in the Mail on Sunday today. This is really going on now. "Schools like Eton and Eltham College, prestigious schools, have promised to decolonise their teaching practice and combat systemic racism." What sort of impact is this having on children? It's a much more detailed article. It's a long article than I've shared with you today. I urge you to check it out. It's very, very good. Particularly if you've got young children attending primary school, just returning, of course, in the last week or so. This is the sort of thing you've got to keep an eye on. When I was in primary school in the very early 1980s, when I was in secondary school in the mid to late 1980s, it was unthinkable that teachers or schools would interfere with the thought processes of students, of us. It was unthinkable that they would demand to know whether we were racist or not, or whether we believe that trans women are really women or not. It was none of their fucking business. And they knew it was none of their fucking business what sort of household you came from. Was your daddy a Sinn Féin supporter? Was he a Labour Party supporter? None of your business. But now, they want to know. But they don't just want to know. They want to impose a way of thinking. And if you got children in school, you should be aware of it. I don't, so you could argue, at least from that point of view, that I don't have any immediate dog in the fight. But as somebody who happens to like children and being around them and listening to them, I suppose I do have a dog in the fight. That's it for Sunday View. Thanks for listening to it today. Back with you tomorrow at 5 with the radio show, the regular show. Vernon Coleman, of course, Monday, 5:30. There will be another guest later in the programme. And James Perloff, lovely gentleman. Why has James not been on the programme of late? I've no idea. But he hasn't been. sometimes you lose touch with people. Lovely guy and a very, very good author. And he's written a book about COVID, and we'll be talking about that on Tuesday because he kindly sent me the book and I've been reading it over the weekend. You have yourselves a lovely Sunday. It's sunny out. Get out! Get out! And get some vitamin D. Leaving with the great Satchmo. Love you. Look after yourselves. See you soon. Bye.